ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack. Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back.
Hello, what's up, H-Town, on a hump day? Some people felt like they got humped last night in the wrong way. But regardless, there was a winner, a loser, and it's now up to us to go forward as one nation indivisible, Barry.
Hey! Hey, what's up?
So, I don't know where to start here, but I do know what I should say.
What?
I do. You know, what I should do is first do the Barry laugh.
Okay. Okay. Oh, boy. What you got?
And then I should say,
hit me with your best shot, as Pat Benatar would say.
So, sources, Nick.
Sources
are out there.
Uh-oh.
And they told me, Mr. I'm not voting, actually voted last night.
Actually voted.
All right.
Is the rumor
all right,
out?
Kids.
Now, what music should we play with that? Like,
do you have Liar Liar Pants on Fire?
Or like
something along those lines. Yeah. That's probably what I should be playing.
Or like, what is it? One of the crime shows?
Actually, you know what? Do me a favor. I'll tell the story, but you have to play Proud to Be an American.
Oh, my God. By Lee Greenwood?
While I tell
the
story.
Lee Greenwood.
Why?
No, because it's going to be beautiful. It's going to be beautiful. Get the Lee Greenwood.
Just play SVU.
Get it.
Just play the SVU theme.
What is
that? Special Victims Unit. Just go ahead.
No, don't play that. No, don't do that. Do you not have Lee Greenwood queued up and ready at all times?
Dun, dun. Not
That's ready. Like the most American thing. Like, literally, I have on my iPod, I have a special shortcut on my phone. At any point, I can just play Lee Greenwood's Proud to Be an American right off the top.
And right
at
after
any
that,
point,
is it Neil Diamond?
Like, if...
Coming to America?
Yeah. If I, like, stop and let an old lady cut in front of me on the freeway, boom, Proud to Be an American plays right then. Like, you're supposed to have that ready to go, Nick. Okay, that's good. I like it.
I thought
it.
This was another one of your guys' favorite chick flick songs or something.
No. Okay, so here's the deal. All right.
Please enlighten us.
I wasn't going to. Down a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, take that down a notch.
There you go. I wasn't going to vote. All right.
You made that very clear.
I did. And I felt like my buddy TJ Ware, who was a comic out of Indianapolis, said it best when he said, "It's not my fault that neither party put forth a candidate that I felt was worthy of my vote." So I wasn't going to vote. Driving home from the show yesterday, I'm listening to The Blitz, and AJ and Fred are bringing in different people from around the office, and I'm, you know, just enjoying the show. And of all people that came on the show, Trey, intern Trey, redhead juggalo, no spelling,
Trey.
Illegitimate child of Robert Swift.
Comes on and says, you know, first of all, Trey is way smarter than I ever gave him credit for. He was intelligent. He was thoughtful. He had good information. And as I'm driving and listening to him talk about how he voted, and he voted for Gary Johnson, and he did that because he's tired of the two-party system, and he wants to see a change in American politics and a move away from the two-party system, and that if Gary Johnson could get 5% of the vote, it would allow that party, the Libertarian Party, to get funding to allow for a third party to more effectively compete in the presidential races. And it spoke to me. It resonated with me because I realized that's the reason I wasn't voting. I was disenfranchised, or I am disenfranchised, with American politics. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I didn't like either of those choices. And what he said made sense to me. So, of all the people in this world,
the guy you lambasted and tore apart for his lack of
is the one that convinced me to vote. I literally called my wife and said, I'm going to come home and get you, and we're going to vote. And she was like, I thought you weren't voting. I was like, it's a long story. There's juggalos involved. I can't explain it. There's like, there's a speak and spell and all these other things.
Juggalos?
Yeah, because that's what AJ calls him, Juggalo Trey, because right. He looks like a juggalo, I guess. But the funny thing is, my wife gets home and gets in her jammies, and she doesn't even vote.
I was going to say, was she not going to vote because you weren't going to vote?
She was going to vote. She was going to vote even though I wasn't.
Yeah.
I get home, she's all in her jammies on the couch. She's like, nah, I'm not going. I was like, I'm going to vote. And I did. I went home, and I went straight. It was, first I went to the wrong polling place. because I went to the one that's based on my address, but I never updated my address when I moved.
Yeah.
So I had to go, you know, a little further. It doesn't matter. I went and I voted for Gary Johnson, and I'm not unlike you guys, I'm not ashamed to come on here and say who I voted for.
Yeah, he's got to go down that road, and he's going to take the pot shots.
I voted for Gary Johnson because I wanted to see a change. I wanted him to get that 5% so that there was always a third choice. Didn't happen. He got 3%. And so, you know, hey. And for the people that are telling me that I wasted my vote, or I didn't. At least I voted.
I think that's the main thing, is regardless of who you vote for, at least make your voice heard and have an opinion. But don't be the person that doesn't vote at all and then has multiple opinions about who won, who lost, and how screwed up it is.
Yeah, and the biggest shock to me last night wasn't that Trump won. It was that Juggalo Trey convinced me to vote. Honest to God, I was just like, wow, that kid had...
Because we hammered him for, 6 or 7 minutes?
Yeah,
plus
and he was...
They hammered the school system that they both came out of. Yeah. Let me just point that out.
Yeah, my Cyfair compadre.
By the way, my buddy Sean Lundy comes through with a great one, a guy that I won't say who tweeted it, but another guy tweeted out, I don't know how we trust the Electoral College. They aren't even in the SEC. They ain't played nobody.
That's pretty good.
And on that note... You understand where the votes came from,
right?
That helped to assist our next president.
I got to say this. I'm sure I'm going to catch hate and heat for it. Whatever, I don't care.
It's fine.
But I put it on Facebook. But I'm not friends with anyone that listens, unless it's like my mom or whatever. But here's the thing: I know people are waking up and they're either gloating or freaking out. And we went through the same thing 8 years ago when Obama was elected. I remember all of my Republican and conservative friends were freaking out that now this nation was going to be – we were going to turn into a nation of terrorists and Muslims and just all of these ridiculous things, and that the sky was falling, and that it would spend us into bankruptcy, and China would own us, and it's just all this ridiculousness. And it's literally happening again, but from the other side. And I say to you – listening, it's never as good or as bad as you think it is. You know what I mean? And yeah. I get it. Listen, I'm not, and this is not an endorsement for Donald Trump by any stretch of the imagination. I said I thought he was just a pile of dung with a wig on the entire. I don't like the man. I think what he stands for is terrible. But the people spoke. I mean, this is what we deal with for the next 4 years.
And I would emphasize, it's never as bad as you think it is.
Exactly. Yeah,
because people freak out and they always think that the worst is to come.
Yeah, and you know what? And the thing is, and Nick put together a whole pile of like athletes and other people that had tweets during the course of the evening, and when it looked like it was going to be decided. And the fact of the matter is, the best thing you can do, especially in a situation like this, which is so volatile for both sides on step away from the keyboard for about 24 hours.
Yeah,
just push away. Because you know what? No matter what you do, it's going to be emotional. It's going to strike someone the wrong way. Then they're going to come back. Then it's going to get – I saw it happen so many times with so many of my friends last night where like on Twitter or Facebook, they would make a comment because they were very pro one side or the other. And someone in a lot of cases was just trying to be funny. And like one of my friends decided they were going to threaten to leave the country. And then someone else said, hey, you know what? You're too good of a man and too good of a dad and too good of a person. But if you do, at least come back every now and then and say hi. And that was just like putting gasoline on a bonfire. And then it was like, I'm not sure they're going to be, you know, they're going to go back and forth. And you can ruin friendships. Just step away from the keyboard for like 24 hours and breathe.
Not only that, there's people like me out there that this is like a holiday for trolling
me.
Yeah,
I know.
Like I'm trolling you. If you're visibly upset, I'm probably going to troll you on Twitter or Facebook just because, again, not an endorsement for Trump or the Republican Party. I've said it all along, and I'll say it again, and I'll keep saying it. I thought both candidates were terrible choices.
I said
for their own reasons. For their own reasons.
It's like the lesser of two evils. Whichever way you go, neither one of them is definitely wearing a halo or perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think the best advice is probably don't get on Facebook or Twitter if you're overly sensitive. Yeah.
Push away from the keyboard. Give yourself a good day or two.
Also, fun fact, 8 years ago we elected our first black president. Last night we elected our first orange president. Good job, America.
And do we really know for sure if his hair is real?
I had to get that out. I'm sorry. I know. I caught heat for that joke on Twitter. Don't care. That's a good joke. I don't give a damn what you say.
You got that dad joke thing fired up?
That's a good joke. No, you can't. That's not a dad joke. That's a well thought out. Just like I said, orange is the new president.
This is what
well thought out joke, people.
I don't understand. Barry is like the judge and jury on everything.
I am.
And so if it's
well, Barry, one, you can't use dad joke. That's a bit from another show. You don't get to. Well,
it annoys the hell out of me. But they use it on everybody. Uses it on me, no matter what I say.
Well, we did get a text that said, "Kid, you stop making corny jokes already this day," which you haven't even made a joke yet. I don't understand.
So,
yeah.
So we got that going for us, and hey, we just got started. We just took the wrapping paper off. We're ready to roll now, people.
Someone wants to know about A&M. I got thoughts. I have thoughts on this, too.
You always have thoughts.
Yeah, on A&M being eighth.
We know
that's the real travesty from last night.
We know that A&M and the Cowboys, those are things that are going to generate a ton of interest. And if you want to prevent that, well, then come up with some good stuff to talk about.
You should have voted for Washington.
713-780-ESPN. I'm all over the place now. 713-780-3776, and you can tweet if you are decided that your 24-hour grace period is up and you are back on social media. Hit us up on Twitter, and we'll be happy to get the tweets that are worth a damn out there. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, it's Joel and Barry till 4 o'clock, and Nick Sharara is behind the glass, and we're ready to have some fun with you guys. So we got the election talk out of the way, and El Jefe's really upset he missed it, and I'm really upset he missed a segment, but because I think overall from like 6 a.m. Monday morning until close of business on maybe, what, he even listens to y'all show on Sundays.
Yeah.
I would say till like Sunday night, El Jefe maybe misses 3.5 minutes of total radio airtime, and he missed the first segment of the show today.
Yeah. Well,
there's always a podcast, though.
I'm not happy with him. He called one of my jokes a dad joke. And
see, I did the same.
I won't stand for that.
We found that out on the air.
I'm a professional. You don't call my jokes dad jokes. I'm a professional.
Stand-up comedians get defensive, too.
Yeah.
They even do it in the middle of a bit.
Well, we just found
sometimes.
That out.
Yeah. Don't. Yeah.
And it's
like,
not
if you
a
don't think
hobby.
That's funny, you can go F yourself. How many times have you heard that?
Oh, dude, that's the worst. I hate when comics do that.
They do that a lot.
They'll be on stage and they'll tell a joke and nobody laughs and they'll go, F you guys, that's a good joke. No, it's not. Not if nobody laughs. If no one laughs, it's not a good joke. That's like, that's how that goes. So, sorry. But yeah, the one joke that he said was a dad joke. It got like 20-something likes and already. So I'm like, nah.
It's a total dad joke.
No, it got a like. It got tons of likes.
Oh, I thought like the fact that he said that got...
No. The joke got retweets and likes.
How many likes did he get after saying
none.
That?
None. Like nobody. None. I didn't even acknowledge it. No, I'm just kidding. I did. Oh, my goodness. All right. We had somebody ask about... So, oh, God. The texts are going to be insane today. I'm just going to warn
they
you.
Are. Yep.
Someone said, Barry, expect a drop in the price of pistols. The gun industry's best salesman is leaving the job in 2 months. That's pretty funny. Somebody wants to know about the Aggies.
Well, I mean, that's what you led in with. We can talk about that if we want. I mean, look, I'm ecstatic. Wisconsin's at 7, and they're not – I mean, I hope they stay there, but that's just – with as bad as I thought they were going to be this year, that's great. I'm a little concerned more than anything else. One, I've told you guys this before. I think Washington, their schedule, I like Peterson. I think as a coach, I think the quarterback is good. But I don't really think they've played that tough of a schedule yet, okay? And it may get a little tougher, but I'm not that impressed. I'd feel really bad as if it goes the way it stands right now. I'd feel really bad for Louisville simply because their one loss is to an undefeated team, which they were winning for most of the game. And I think it would be really, really fun to put Jackson on the main stage against a huge opponent to see, like, yeah, he's going to win the Heisman regardless, but to see if, you know, what he can do against a big time program and a big time defense and see if he can make everyone else around him better and do something that everybody thinks can't be done. And I don't think he's going to get that chance.
So my beefs with last night's rankings, a couple things. And it was, I think it's probably already been talked about ad nauseum, but I agree with it. I don't understand how you have LSU fall 11 spots to 24. They gave Bama their toughest test all year. But yet you punish them, but you don't punish A&M, who lost to a team that's irrelevant.
Right.
In Mississippi State.
No, that was a hell of a game, and I watched it.
I don't understand.
It's the best scoreless game after three quarters that you could have found.
That was boring as hell.
But if you appreciate football, you realize there was a lot of quality plays being made on both sides.
It was a struggle for me to watch it, but it doesn't take away from the fact that LSU gave Bama all they could handle. All they could handle.
I agree.
It might be the closest game Bama plays all year.
That actually is a legitimate statement as well.
And so for them to fall 11 spots to 24 – yet the Aggies lose to a Mississippi State team who is junky on both sides of the ball, and they only fall four spots to number eight. I don't understand. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they beat Auburn. But if you're going to look at who people are beating but not who they're losing to, it's a slippery slope, because now you're always like, well, Mississippi State beat A&M. Should they be seven since A&M beat eight, beat Auburn, and they're nine? I mean, that's just – it doesn't. You have to look at the body of work. A&M has two losses, and you're not punishing them like you punished LSU, which it doesn't make sense to me. Washington being up there, finally getting into four. I heard this argument, and I thought this was really poignant, and I can't say that I disagree with it. And I think it was during the selection committee show or whatever. I was listening on the Blitz driving home. Somebody said, if you're going to put A&M above Washington because they had the one loss and you're saying Washington didn't play anyone, then don't you need to do the same thing with Ohio State? Because their one loss was to 10th-ranked Penn State, right? So why is it that you'll have A&M leapfrog Washington for that fourth spot, but you won't give that same courtesy to Ohio State? What's changed in that week? And this is where I think the problems come in, is the committee this year is looking very inconsistent. They're not being consistent with their reasoning for making the top four or how they're making people fall. A&M falling four versus Nebraska nine, and Nebraska lost to Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, right?
Or Ohio State, was it?
No, they lost. Well, they lost to both.
Yeah.
They lost to Ohio State last week, lost to Wisconsin the week before.
Yeah, so they lost to the seventh team in the nation and the fifth team in the nation, and they're 19. That's their two losses. A&M is still up there way above them, having lost to Mississippi State. So I just don't understand it. And, you know, again, I'm an Aggie, but this isn't making sense to me. My top four, I think I'm fine with Washington being there. Mm-hmm. I think Michigan should be second, Clemson third. And then you could make the case for any of the following three to be in that number four spot, that being Washington, Ohio State, and Louisville. Me personally, right now, based on the fact that Washington really hasn't played anyone or has any impressive wins, even though Ohio State lost to Penn State, I think I would still put Ohio State at four, because I think if they played head-to-head, if you had to bet your mortgage or bet your house or your life or whatever, who are you betting on, Ohio State or Washington? And that's how I try to come up with who would win this game. If you had to bet it all, who would you pick?
Ohio State.
Absolutely. So that's why I think they should be ahead of them.
Yeah,
so.
And you know what? But okay, let me ask you this, because you make valid points, and this is like crazy that it must have been really weird, and I must have been up too late last night watching the election and stuff, because I'm actually agreeing with you quite a bit. But at the same time, would you feel better if it was an eight-team system? Would you feel better if it was an eight-team playoff, so that you made sure that everybody at least that deserved to be in got in? Would that make it better? Because that's something that they're obviously trying to get to. But that's a question I'll throw out to both of you, because some people think no matter what they do and no matter how you set up the system, you're always going to have the naysayers that say the system doesn't work, and you're going to leave somebody out.
I mean, I've always felt like eight teams would be a good number for the playoff system, but I'm glad that we have the four, and I think if you're going to expand it, you do it two teams at a time. I could see going to six and giving one and two a bye, and letting, you know, three and six play, and four and five play, and then they move on and do it that way. And then if you still feel like you're not getting the best six teams in the nation, then move it to eight. But I'm okay with it, because – yeah, there's always going to be that debate about that fourth team, but we still have a ways to go. I think that those can, you know, these schedules will sort themselves out. Who does Washington play? They have USC and Washington State, both top 25 ranked teams, still left on their schedule. Chances are they could drop one of those. They're at Washington State for their closer, for the last game of the season, and that's a rivalry game. So as we've seen, rivalry games can go either way, regardless of who's ranked where. So it's funny how these things kind of sort themselves out over time. I think the wild card in all this is Louisville. They don't really play anybody tough. They play Wake, Houston, and Kentucky, and that's it. So if they run the table, then what? What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's
their one loss. Their one loss would be to number 5 Clemson.
Yeah.
How do you count
them?
I'm
saying, I feel really bad for Louisville as it sits right now. And yeah, that U of H game, which at the start of the year looked like it was going to be a monster, it's just the luster's worn off because U of H just hasn't lived up to their end of the bargain.
How about we just give Bama the championship and call it?
I think it's going to be pretty much like that anyway, whether we want to do it now or not. That's how good Bama is, but we'll see. If you got anything you want to chime in on that, on the college football rankings and playoffs, 713-780-ESPN, or hit us up on Twitter, and we will be back with much more. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, you know, from time to time, we like to get you some special guests, some people that are pretty knowledgeable in the areas of sports, and get you a chance to hear some in-depth analysis of your favorite teams and the sports that you love to follow, like in this case, NBA basketball. We now welcome to the show a man that probably needs no introduction, a man that was a very successful college coach at Seton Hall. He also transitioned to the NBA, where he coached and was an assistant coach with Greg Popovich in San Antonio, was the head coach of the Portland Trailblazers. We crossed paths when I left Portland, and he took over as the head coach of the Blazers, and he is one of the nicest guys I've ever met in the business, PJ Carlissimo. PJ, welcome to the show. Great to have you. Joel here, Barry there. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate the time.
Joel, appreciate it. You're going to lose your credibility, some of the things you said, but it's nice to be with you guys and enjoy it. I wish I was going to be in San Antonio for the game tonight. I'm going to have to watch it on TV. I'm assistant coach in my son's eighth grade team, so I have a prior commitment, so I didn't make the cut for the ESPN crew for tonight, so I'm going to have to watch on TV and listen to it.
Well, I know that you will be out there and covering plenty of games throughout the year, and I know you followed the game so far to this point in the season. First question for all the Rockets fans in our listening audience would be your take on the D'Antoni system, how James Harden has flourished within that system, and how you analyze the Rockets to this early point in the season.
Well, I think, first of all, a great hire by Daryl and Les. I'm a huge Mike fan. Can't tell you how many years we go back. I remember meeting Mike, believe it or not, I was doing a clinic in Italy, and Mike had just been made the switch from Milan, where he is and was a legend as a player and a coach, to Treviso Benetton. We were in the same hotel. They were having a press conference announcing his move to Treviso, and Brad Greenberg called me up and asked me to come in and interview for the Portland job. So God knows how many eons ago that was. I think 94. Love Mike. Love his insights into the game. I think for the Rockets, tremendous hire. For James Harden, tremendous hire. I got to ask you a question up front. Did their white uniforms not get there? Why have they not played at home? All I see them, every time I see them, they're not wearing white uniforms. That's not a good way to start the season, particularly for a new coach with the new roster.
Yeah, well, they actually wore them on the road the other night, but in terms of when they wear them at home, 14 of the first 20 on the road. They did get some wins. We've had the conversation here. Barry and I were talking about it early before the season started. I thought Dallas had a veteran roster and a good starting lineup, thought that they might at least maintain a spot in the Western Conference playoff race, but they have not looked good. The Rockets beat them twice. They've beaten the Knicks, and who else did they win?
They lost in L.A. No, they had some good wins. Washington, good, you know, I like what they've done. I'm taken aback. I mean, everybody, you end up playing 82. That's what they always tell you. But, I mean, wow, what a tough way to start. The wins over Dallas were impressive. I think Dallas has dinged up especially with Dirk, and I think they'll find a way to get back in the hunt, but whether they can get there or not, I don't know. I like what Houston has done so far, and it's so difficult to integrate either new players or a new system, a new coaching staff. They're doing both, which is really, really a challenge. So I think given the schedule, given the changes both to the roster and the coaching staff in that, I think they're very good where they're at right now, and I think there's a lot of reason to be optimistic going forward. People are going to be wasting their breath saying we'd like to be better defensively. Of course they would. But they have an offensive roster. They have a roster that was put together more so because of what they do offensively. The two pick and roll guys, who, by the way, particularly in Clint's case, can defend. But, I mean, they're so good in the pick and roll, diving to the basket. James is good whatever he does, but he's especially good with the ball in a creative system and featuring the pick and rolls and surrounding him with three-point shooters. And when you add Ryan, you add Eric, the guy that I love the roster. They also are missing arguably their best defensive player. You can call Bev whatever you want to call. I mean, he's an excellent basketball player, but he's a super defender, and he sets the tone for a team because of the position he plays. So that has also not helped. I'd be more concerned with the rebounding and with the turnovers than with the with the defense. They're going to turn the ball over because they have so many possessions in a game. But I think that to think with the personnel they have, they're all of a sudden going to become one of the elite defensive teams in the league, not realistic. But they need to rebound, I think, better, maybe significantly better. And they certainly need to take good care of the ball. Again, they're not going to be a 12-turnover team or an 11-turnover team, but those will bite you late in the game, and they're going to be in close games. And on the other, you know, when they take care of the ball, they got a great opportunity to score because they have a lot of weapons.
PJ Carlissimo joining us. Coach, what are your thoughts on the Western Division and how it shakes out? Some people may have thought I was crazy picking San Antonio to win the West. What are your thoughts on how you see this shaking out?
Well, I think, I mean, there's a little bit of a tier structure. I think the West is still awesome. And again, it's easy for me, Barry, you and Joel know, but when you sit on the other bench and you have been in both, all my years as a head coach and my years in San Antonio, we're in the Western Conference. I was an assistant in Toronto for 1 year. I was assistant in Jersey for one, and then a chunk in Brooklyn. And then when they made the coaching change, got to coach Brooklyn toward the end. The difference, those 50 games, the difference between 52 games in the East and a 30-game Western schedule and vice versa is mind-boggling how different it is. The depth in the West is amazing. It's so hard. But I think there's still a tier structure. Without question, Golden State, San Antonio, and the Clippers, and then draw a line. Now, I'm not saying everybody else isn't capable of beating them and of being competitive with them. I think it's going to be hard to win a series against them because the rosters they have, the continuity they have, particularly Golden State and the Clippers, beat them 4 out of 7 when they're probably going to be the home team is going to be very difficult. Having said that, then from then on, it's just a Donnybrook. I mean, forget about it. Anybody's capable of beating each other. Health is going to be a huge factor in the equation. And there's a number of teams going to be fighting for those 8 spots, or in my opinion, those other 5 spots, barring injury. And Houston can be in the mix. There's no question. I think it would be an enormous, enormous achievement to get the 4 spot. I think that's asking too much. But I think they're going to be a team that will continue to improve the longer Mike coaches them over the course of the year, particularly they get, the roster back full. I liked Mote Yunus what he did in the past. So I mean, I think you miss guys when guys aren't there. So I think Beverly, Mote Yunus, I mean, the pieces that are missing, that's significant. But having said that, with the roster they have, with time, I think Mike's going to have them right there. They could make a run at it. Maybe I'd love to see them prove me wrong, but I think that's asking an awful lot in the Western Conference this year.
Coach, Dwayne Wade was talking to the press and mentioned Pat Riley, and he said something to the effect of, if you're not with Pat, you're against him. I would think that would be the thought process for most GMs. You've been around the sport for forever. Is that the case? I mean, or is that kind of the exception and not the norm?
No, Riles is different. I mean, I'm an enormous Pat Riley fan, but Riles controls a franchise. It's funny because that's happened a little bit now recently. You know, you see that with Stan Van Gundy. You see it with Tibbs. Certainly over the years, RC and Pop, they control San Antonio. Peter Holt lets them, gives them the resources, and the players empower them to do it. But, you know, it's their way or the highway. They might do it in a more amicable way. That's the way it was with Riles, you know, even when LeBron was there. So there's only a few situations like that. You know, the obvious one in football, with all due respect to the Texans, is New England. Belichick is in charge there, and it's a known factor. It's an uneasy alliance in professional sports. The one big advantage to coaching in college versus coaching in the pros. In college, you're the GM, you're the owner, you're everything. You have to answer to your athletic director and ultimately to your president, but you're the guy. You go pick the players. You recruit them. They come to play for you. The coach stays there. The players, you know, only stay 4 years and they move on. That's not the way it is in the NBA or professional sports. So it's silly to talk about. You know, it's hard to do that. That is the reality. That's the way it is. If you find a guy who's smart enough, and Riley is, Popovich and Buford are, then you got to give him time. And I think, to be candid, Les has been good with Darryl. Darryl's been able to implement the way he wants to play and the kind of players that he wants. They've gone a little in and out with coaches, which, you know, I'm always going to come down on the side of coaches. They've had a lot of coaches. I don't like franchises that have a lot of coaches, but I like a lot of the things, and clearly there's a vision in Houston that really hasn't varied very much in recent years.
Coach, we appreciate you spending some time with us. Everybody out there knows they can find you throughout the year on ESPN. Everything else, status quo for you? I mean, is that it? Any aspirations of ever getting back onto the bench and do any coaching, or is this
I would love to. I'm at a tough time. I'm married late. I got a 15-year-old and an 11-year-old, and it's a tough time to not be with them right now. And, you know, I joke about it, but, I mean, I'm an assistant coach of my son's eighth-grade team. I think that's the level I probably should be coaching at right now. So I enjoy it. I miss coaching. I'd love to get back in. At some point, remains to be seen. I'm running out of GMs and owners. I need some low intellectual GMs and owners to get another job. So we'll see what happens.
Well, if you need anybody as a reference, I'm always there for you. I appreciate you spending some time with us. We love having you on the show. If you have some time later in the year, we'd love to have you back.
Joel, Barry, love to. Appreciate it. Good being with you again.
PJ Carlissimo has been our guest. Thanks, PJ. Appreciate it.
All right. Take it easy. Have a good one.
Good guy, PJ Carlissimo. And, guys, I want to tell you guys right now about another good guy, Josh over there at Infuse Energy. Infuse Energy is a great spot if you're looking for an energy provider that cares about you, the customer, and Taylor makes a program and a contract for you so that you get the best energy deal possible without being used and abused in the process. They don't jerk you around. They're not going to screw you over to make a buck. It's a relationship, and they value it. They make sure that you are 100% satisfied, they are 100% honest with you, and they will risk losing your business to cheaper competition if it means you've got a better deal. That's a trusted friend in the business, and that's all you can ask for when there are so many companies out there trying to pull at you and get your business. They're 100% green energy. It's all at your fingertips. You can sign up and choose a green plan, which will offset your electricity use with renewable energy credits. That helps decrease your carbon footprint. As I mentioned, the CEO, Josh, is a great guy. He puts a joke in the bill every month for you just to try and lighten the mood and show you that he cares about just you as a person and enlightening your day, as well as just being your energy provider. Please do me a favor. Check them out. See if the rates make sense to you. And if they do, join the club. 844-INFUSE2. That's 844-463-8732. Or hit up infuseenergy.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Hey, it's Joel and Barry on a hump day. you said, PJ Carlissimo, the ESPN analyst, and I did. I sound like I swallowed a pound of gravel.
Yeah, what happened there?
I talk for a living. I don't know if you noticed that or not. Sometimes, hey, takes its toll on you.
We need to get you some lemon honey tea.
You know what, by the way, that whole thing about what works and what doesn't, and all, it, like broadcasters for years used to always have to do the hot tea with lemon and all this other stuff.
Right.
We actually asked the team doctors for the Rockets, and they said that you can do more to better the quality of your voice and eliminate the gravel and stuff by having some form of Gatorade than anything else.
Really?
That it coats your throat. That it does what it's supposed to do.
Oh,
it doesn't have to be hot with lemon and tea and all this other stuff. And that a Gatorade would do just as good.
You should have never said coat your throat.
I realize that.
It's going to get so bad now.
But that's not the first time I've heard that tea is not necessary. Like hot tea and lemon is not
necessarily those are things that have always been out
I've never had that problem. Like I don't run out of voice. I know some people do. Like they're, you know, I guess singers, maybe there's more strain, but that's never, I've never lost my voice in 42, 43 years.
Now I have reflux, but it doesn't affect my voice. But I know others, Lance Zierlein, for one in this market, has reflux so bad that he can only do like 3 hours a day and his voice starts to peter out.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And it's just different people have different levels and different ways it affects them. But the reflux to me doesn't affect my voice. But a lot of times, like the weather change or something like that, can get you in a situation where you sound like Demi Moore. How about that?
Ooh.
Well, hello. All right.
Demi Moore.
So,
huh?
How about this? How about the fact that if you guys don't want to talk about any more college football, and we've talked a little NBA with PJ.
Well, I did want to.
Gosh darn it. Then go ahead.
I had one question that I felt it was appropriate to respond to. Appropriate.
Yes. Well, apropos.
It was from a text, and I don't know. They didn't leave a name. But somebody said, Barry, before you go and give all the reasons why A&M shouldn't be number 8, come up with a list of who should be ahead of them. Very valid question. Very valid point. Because if you start to go through there, if you start to look at who's ranked, right, but obviously behind them is Auburn. And you could say, well, Auburn, but they beat Auburn. So I think that's where the committee is thinking that. You've got Penn State. Penn State had a pretty bad loss when they dropped one to Pitt. So, you know, that is equivalent to A&M's Mississippi State. And then Penn State's other losses to number 4, Michigan. A&M's losses to number 1, Alabama. So you kind of got to go through these scenarios, right? So when I started really trying to look at it, I thought, one, you could make a case for Oklahoma to be there, even though they had that bad loss to U of H. Their other loss was to OSU, Ohio State. So they had the loss against U of H at the very beginning of the season. But you're now rewarding Auburn for climbing the ladder and having put it all together. But you're not punishing them for early season missteps. So why punish OU for early season missteps against a U of H team who, for the most part, played pretty well for most of the season? And when you played them, they were 15 in the nation. So there were a few, like OU, you could even go, and again, I'm reaching here a little bit to make the point, but Oklahoma State, if you look at their two losses, they have that Mississippi State loss by losing to CMU. A Central Michigan loss is not a good loss, but then their other losses to Baylor, but they've also, they beat a ranked Texas team and they just beat number 10 West Virginia a couple of weeks ago. So it's a valid point, you know, but I still think there are teams out there like Auburn who are playing better than A&M is right now, and so how much of that comes into play when you make that list? But again, props to the texter; it's a valid point. Name 5 people you'd put ahead of A&M right now, and it's tough to come up with 5. You start reaching a little.
Wisconsin for sure.
No, that's not. That's
yes, that who? Is. Look at how many ranked teams the Badgers
they're
have
already
this
above
year.
A&M though. They're
I understand.
7.
Well, I'm just validating it.
Well, he's saying okay. So what his point is who would you put if you take A&M out? If you say they didn't fall far enough, name a couple of teams that you would replace with Auburn. Well, they beat Auburn head to head.
Yeah, I can't say that they should. They didn't fall far enough.
Penn State lost has a couple of bad losses. OU has the bad loss. I mean, everyone after Auburn and A&M has bad losses, just like A&M does. So, a valid point.
Yeah, it definitely is. And that's why, again, and I go back to everything that I said about the SEC before you guys start texting and tweeting that again. We'll do it at the end of the year because this is a bad week for the SEC. But the SEC is still definitely very much in it, and they still have teams that can compete. And Auburn is right in the thick of it. They have a tough schedule, but they have some. They still have a lot of ground that they can make up in a hurry based on the fact that they're sitting where they're sitting. So it'll be interesting to see. The schedule still has to play itself out. But, again, I feel bad for the team. For Louisville, if there's one team that I feel bad for right now, because based on everything and how it sets up and where they're sitting, I just, at the end of the year, if we don't get to see them and particularly Mr. Jackson sitting in a situation where he's on the national stage against a big time opponent to just show everything that he could possibly do, especially because all they really did was lose to Clemson and Clemson's undefeated, I would feel very bad for them.
Yeah, it would suck. But do you think they beat U of H?
Nope.
I said, when the obviously Nick doesn't, but you know what? The thing is when it first came out, right? When we first started talking at the schedule and we looked at I would have said U of H has got a legitimate shot and it's going to be a huge game. But because the luster has worn off so much, I just don't think U of H has got a shot. I'm a little concerned that the players at U of H are more concerned about if their coach is going to be there at the end of the year or not, and they're not focused like they were at the start of the year.
Well, something has happened to that team. Something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Louisville, like you said, other than the loss to Clemson, which, you know, 42-36 against an undefeated top five team, not a terrible loss by any stretch of the imagination. But I think that, you know, out of the top six, you can talk about position. You know, again, you go back to the argument, should Ohio State be ahead of Washington for the same reason that A&M was? But I think they got it. They got the top six correct. It's just the order. So, I really don't have a great argument for anyone to replace A&M at number eight. There's some decent arguments but you start splitting hairs when you start talking about quality losses, which is a ridiculous statement to begin with.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the thing. We can argue about it all day long and whether an eight-game playoff is better than a four-game playoff. The fact of the matter is this is what we've got. This is what we see. I really think Louisville is the team that I feel bad for now. Hopefully, by the end of the year, hopefully it all shakes out to the point where we can all say they got it right. But for right now, that's my overview looking at it at the present time. I want to change gears a little bit now, and I want to throw something out for everybody out there that we can talk about on the other side. But are you going to be happy if your Astros, who have been close and are now on the cusp, are now seeing the hot stove heat up so much that the names being thrown around for your hometown nine include Miguel Cabrera or Edwin Encarnacion?
World Series.
Well, hello, Houston. How about that? Let's talk about baseball and see. The Astros could, one, go out and sign Edwin Encarnacion, but supposedly the Tigers are shopping Miguel Cabrera and Justin Verlander. Let's talk about that next. ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I assumed you knew.